Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The sexual assault charges against Dominique Strauss-Kahn in New York might be in jeopardy now that the credibility of his accuser has been questioned. But that won't be the end of his legal troubles or the speculation that his possible presidential bid in France is over. To the legal troubles, the lawyer for French novelist Tristan Bennoau says she will still file a lawsuit against Strauss-Kahn tomorrow in Paris, accusing the former head of the International Monetary Fund of attempting to rape her 9 years ago. But as we know, American prosecutors admitted in court on Friday that the hotel housekeeper who claimed he tried to rape her lied to them about her background and made incriminating remarks in a taped phone conversation. Strauss-Kahn has now been released from house arrest. And just a little while ago today, his lawyers announced they will file a slander complaint against that French writer, Bennoau. Emily Bazelon is legal affairs editor for Slate. Emily, start in New York. Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. says his office is still investigating. DSK, as he's called, is still charged. Do you think the sexual assault charges against Dominique Strauss-Kahn are going to be dropped? Do you think the case is unraveling that much?
Yes, I do. I think the prosecutors, the way they've framed the case in the last few days, calling into question so many aspects of the credibility of DSK's accuser. That all makes me think that they don't really imagine that this is going to continue in criminal court.
And by the way, we've been hearing a lot of this over the weekend, but for those, you know, maybe out on their holiday, just if you could briefly sum up the revelations about the accuser.
Well, there are a number of ways in which her accounts differ from what she originally told the prosecutor. The facts that have changed that matter the most for determining whether she was telling the truth about the events on the day she says she was raped are that she originally said that right after the incident she waited outside in a hallway and then went and told people what had happened. Now she says she went and cleaned another room before doing that. That doesn't necessarily mean that she is lying about the rape. I don't actually think any of the new discrepancies that have emerged really prove that. But there, you know, it's a problem for the prosecution. And then there is a phone call she made to a man who's in prison for having a large amount of marijuana, and the conversation was taped because he's a prisoner. And she said something like, "Don't worry, this guy has a lot of money," talking about DSK.
Well, just to jump in there, you know, as I'm hearing people say, be a little devil's advocate here, for instance, can't a woman still be raped, come forward with charges, have a friend say, you know, don't do that. You know, they attack rape victims. And she responds, "I know what I'm doing. This man has a lot of money." In other words, can a person make mistakes or want revenge and still be a rape victim?
Absolutely. I think that's why it's not clear that anything that's come out means that she was not, in fact, raped. That all could have still happened. And yet, you can see from the prosecutor's point of view why they are nervous about putting her on the stand, because in addition to this phone call, which, you know, played in court, certainly could raise questions about her motivations, she also changed her story in several ways. Between her asylum application, she was paying cell phone records for people, cell phone bills for people she didn't tell the prosecutors about. There are a number of ways in which she no longer seems like a kind of model immigrant. Yeah. And again, I don't think those things ultimately go to whether she was raped or not, but they would give the defense plenty to work with on the stand.
Well, no one is denying there was a sexual act in that hotel room. DSK has a bountiful reputation for his sexual activity. But what do you think happened here? District Attorney Vance's critics say that he moved too fast in bringing charges. His defenders say he had to act fast because DSK was on a plane leaving the country. What do you think went wrong here?
Well, a number of things. I mean, I understand the emergency, the sense of urgency about DSK leaving the country. However, DSK could have then been allowed to go free on bail in the United States the way he is now. That would have just kind of taken some of the air out of the case. And then I think the other really interesting thing is that viewed through the lens of the French, who have a different, several different procedures in their criminal justice system, our customs of photographing people handcuffed, of writing about people as if they were guilty all but, it really shows the power of prosecutors to make someone appear guilty even before a trial has taken place. And I think this notion of presumed innocent before proven guilty, you could see in this case why DSK's defenders were saying that we had lost sight of that idea.
Bernard-Henri Lévy, the left-leaning French writer who was a good friend of Dominique Strauss-Kahn's, writes that the New York treatment of DSK was pornographic. On the other hand, you've got New York tabloids now reporting that his accuser was a prostitute, so there's plenty of flinging going around. But how does this more broadly reflect the nature of rape accusations?
They're just so difficult to prosecute, and I think also for society to process when you have this very high-profile kind of case, because we are so often left with these he said, she said situations in which there is, you know, maybe a little bit of physical evidence, but nothing that is totally conclusive. And so the credibility of the accuser becomes paramount. The job of the defense is to try and smear her, and that's what we're seeing go on in the press right now.
Oh, well, and yet, you know, is it more, was this more high profile because, I mean, it obviously was more high profile because of who the accused was. How often does this happen, that a case unravels like this?
Well, it's unusual for a rape accuser to make a false accusation. No, again, we don't know that that happened here, but it certainly is, if not common, at least a regular occurrence that in court, it becomes really hard to make these charges stand up because juries are supposed to find beyond a reasonable doubt that someone is guilty. And when you have, you know, one person's account of what happened, and maybe in this case there's a little bit of physical evidence, there's some bruising, there's apparently a pair of torn stockings and a few other things, but you have an incident that took place behind closed doors, which doesn't have the kind of, you know, violent, sometimes doesn't have the sort of violent ramifications and evidence that allow people to know that an assault has happened as opposed to a consensual event.
Well, you say cases are difficult to prove, but in your view, it's unusual that someone would make a false accusation of rape.
That's absolutely true.
Statistically.
When you look at the research on false accusations of rape, the most reliable studies show about an 8 to 10% rate of false accusals. So that's really low. That means that, you know, 90% of the time people are telling the truth. On the other hand, there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of rape accusations that get made in this country every year. And so for the people on the other side of a false accusation, of course, this is a devastating event for them.
Yeah. Emily Bazelon, legal affairs editor for Slate. Emily, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.